Super Bowl 53, the New England Patriots and the LA Rams, game time 5:30. That's on CBS TV. Now the WGTD Friday forecast from the National Weather Service. Cloudy, not as cold today, a high of 19, 16 degrees overnight. 30% chance of rain or freezing drizzle for Saturday. Saturday's high 36. And look at this. Super Bowl Sunday, 43 degrees, very good chance of rain. Monday, 50 degrees and rainy. Still a cold morning, four above across the board. Racine, Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, Lake Geneva, and Milwaukee. Wind is calm, so there's no wind chill. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Sunday is Super Bowl 53. The Los Angeles Rams, the champions of the NFC, will be taking on the New England Patriots, champions of the AFC, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. For the Rams, it has been a dramatic rise to the top under the leadership of Sean McVay, the youngest NFL head coach in history. The Patriots are making history of their own. This is their third consecutive Super Bowl appearance, their fourth in 5 years, their record 11th overall, and this is the ninth Super Bowl appearance of the tandem of head coach Bill Belichick and quarterback Tom Brady. Their first Super Bowl back in 2002 was against the Rams. At that point, it was the St. Louis Rams, and that, of course, was the start of an extraordinary story. On today's morning show, I'm going to be speaking with Casey Sherman, a highly regarded sports writer, get his predictions about Super Bowl 53. But first, I want to replay for you my memorable conversation with him and a conversation about the great book that he wrote about the amazing Tom Brady. We're spending the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show talking about one of the biggest names in NFL history, quarterback Tom Brady, loved by many, hated by many, and certainly a compelling figure in so many different ways. And of course, many people, even if you're not a Patriots fan, even if you're not a football fan, surely know the story of what has sometimes been called Deflategate, a controversy that surrounded quarterback Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And it wasn't the first time that the organization itself was caught up in controversy, but this was one of the first instances in which Tom Brady was very specifically targeted and ultimately suspended for 4 games the following season. The story of how he came back from that public embarrassment to enjoy one of the greatest seasons of his career is told in a really riveting story and book called 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. It's co-authored by Dave Wedge and Casey Sherman. And Casey Sherman is a very, very talented journalist and author with a number of books to his credit, including the absolutely marvelous books Boston Strong, The Finest Hour, Rose for Mary, and The Ice Bucket Challenge. I read Boston Strong, loved every page, and I have very much enjoyed reading 12. And I'm excited to be able to speak with Casey Sherman for the next minutes about his new book, published by Little Brown and Company and just out. Casey Sherman, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Greg.
You certainly have a great track record, and now this marvelous book. Tell us, first of all, the kind of cooperation that you were able to have with some of the key figures involved in this, including quarterback Tom Brady himself.
Yeah, we got unprecedented access into the Patriot organization, including Brady himself. Brady's never cooperated for a book before that he didn't author himself. He came out with a self-help book a year ago, but didn't really touch on any of the drama that we explore in the pages of 12. This is the biggest sports scandal in American history since the Black Sox scandal of 1919, where you had Chicago White Sox players literally throwing the World Series. And fast forward to this day and age where you've got an equipment violation that is treated the same way, almost like a capital murder offense. So obviously the folks inside the organization wanted to tell their story, and it's really interesting all the drama and the challenges that a guy like Tom Brady, you're looking at two of the greatest quarterbacks in the league, Brady and Aaron Rodgers, and Brady getting all of these challenges and these obstacles and overcoming it in a way that will go down in history.
One of the things that surprised me most in your really interesting book, which we should also hasten to add is not a full-blown biography, but you certainly lay out some rich context for where Tom Brady comes from, and in particular kind of the span of his whole career, even ahead of the Patriots. I think for a lot of people who have followed him and what he's done with the Patriots, it's kind of amazing to see that he was not necessarily college football's golden boy, with this aura of greatness already surrounding him. At least most people who looked at Tom Brady would never have had a sense that a spectacular career in the NFL was going to follow. Just tell our listeners a little bit about what I'm talking about here.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Greg. Everybody now looks at Tom Brady as the superstar married to a supermodel, but he's always struggled to get recognition, to get his fair chance to compete on the football field, all the way going back to high school. And obviously the University of Michigan, which we write about extensively in the book, that he was never given, the full confidence of any of his coaches, regardless of how well he performed on the field. That's why he was only sixth round draft pick in the 2000 draft. He wasn't a number one like somebody like Aaron Rodgers. This guy was an afterthought, and that fueled him because he thought he was, every bit as good as your Aaron Rodgers, if not better. So that self-doubt or in terms of how others perceive him really gave him the fuel that he needed to gain that massive competitive edge that I think you're seeing now.
Right. I mean, I still remember, I think it's a chapter called The Underdog, where in describing Tom Brady at a point in time when he was engaged in kind of a rivalry with another quarterback with more spectacular physical gifts, you describe Tom Brady as a slow, skinny, fourth-year junior with average arm strength and the speed of a tortoise.
Well, we described him that way, but actually the NFL scouts described him that way. That was written down during the NFL combine when they were scouting Brady, and they see this guy that, on paper certainly wasn't overwhelming. In fact, he was very underwhelming, but every time he got on the football field, he pretty much led his team to victory. So there was something there that the Patriots obviously recognized. Now, they didn't recognize it well enough to draft him higher than the sixth round. The fact that he was still on the board in the sixth round is quite startling to anybody. So it was really luck of the draw for the Patriots to get this guy that would change the history of the franchise.
Right. And as one of his teammates said it so very well in their amazing Orange Bowl victory over Alabama, David Terrell said, "Brady won this game. Tom Brady showed poise. He showed the heart of a leader, the heart of a lion." And, of course, it's fair to say that by the time he does get to the NFL and ultimately to the Patriots, he's no longer skinny, and he probably no longer has average arm strength or the speed of a tortoise. But, I mean, is his greatness because, at least in part, he has elevated himself in a sense physically, or is his greatness still rooted in what he does mentally on the field?
Well, I think his physical condition now matches his mental preparedness. I think his body finally caught up to his brain, and we're seeing a guy that has had unprecedented success over a span of 18 years in any professional sport. I mean, he's a transcendent athlete, much like Michael Jordan was, much like Muhammad Ali was. You know, what he's doing now, he's entering his training camp this year at 41 years old. Now, think about that. That's insane to really grasp. I don't know if I could get out of bed without aches and pains at 41, and I don't play football every day. So imagine what he's doing at the very highest level of competition.
Absolutely amazing. Also, in terms of context, I want you to say a word about when Bill Belichick returns to New England, takes over the Patriots in February of 2000. You tell us that he realized that he had inherited a weak and dysfunctional team, one that was a far cry from the squad that played in the 1996 Super Bowl. Just how bad were the Patriots at this point in time? I think it's important to remember that because it helps us appreciate all the more what has been accomplished by the Patriots and Bill Belichick since then.
Yeah, they were a it was a Pete Carroll coach team that Bill Belichick took over, and they were weak-minded. They were completely out of shape. And Bill Belichick's first rule was to, you know, we may not have the most wins of any team in our division, but we're going to be in the best shape of any team that we face. So he really put all of his players, the ones that could stay on the roster, through an incredible endurance test in training camp. And the players that actually got to hang around and enjoy the success, they understood right away this isn't, you know, your father's Patriots team. The Patriots were always a laughing stock in the NFL. And now there was an opportunity to really achieve greatness and retain that greatness over an extraordinary period of time.
Mm. You also tell us that when Tom Brady arrives on the scene, it is without much at all in the way of fanfare and without particularly high expectations, at least generally speaking, and certainly as far as the public was concerned, it's kind of a matter of Tom who. Just say a word about how quickly Tom Brady and the Patriots were able to achieve amazing success.
Well, the only recognition he got when he joined the team, you had writers that had no idea who he was, but they were concerned that, you know, asking why would the Patriots waste a draft pick on another quarterback? They already had a franchise quarterback in Drew Bledsoe. They had a pretty, solid veteran backup quarterback as well. So to take Brady with a draft pick, they thought was a wasted pick. But the first day of training camp, Tom Brady walks up to owner Robert Kraft, and Kraft doesn't know who the heck he is. He thinks he's a pizza boy, and he looks Brady in the eye, or Brady looks him in the eye and says, I'm the best decision you ever made.
And of course that fairly quickly becomes very, very evident.
Yeah, we talk about obviously the hit heard around the world, at least in New England, when Drew Bledsoe suffered a massive hit from a New York Jets linebacker early in the 2000 season that put him out for several weeks. He almost died. We talk about, you know, the severity of the injury to Bledsoe, and that hoisted Brady into the starting lineup. He began to win, and he never gave up that position. He would tell his friends, his boyhood friends in California or his buddies at the University of Michigan, he says, you know, I'm better than Drew Bledsoe. If I get into the lineup, I'm never going to lose this job. And he meant it, and it turned out to be very accurate.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Casey Sherman, who is the co-author of a book just published and right now one of the most discussed books in America, called 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. So, it's actually the third section of the book in which you finally take on this controversy that engulfs the New England Patriots and very specifically Tom Brady. And, of course, this is a controversy that comes after at least one other very serious controversy that surrounds the Patriots. But this one very much takes aim at Tom Brady himself, a controversy that's come now to be known as Deflategate. And I think a lot of our listeners probably know at least the rough parameters of what caused this controversy in the first place. I want you to say a word about how you have, you and your co-author, have tried to approach kind of the central matter of what happened and who was guilty of what. It seems to me that you have proceeded really carefully and have tried to be fair and even-handed to all parties concerned. Say a word about what you and co-author Dave Wedge thought about in terms of handling this central aspect of the Tom Brady story.
Well, myself and my co-author were, you know, veteran investigative journalists. I've written about terrorism. I've written about organized crime. I've written about the CIA. And, you know, there are certainly elements that I've covered in my past that came to bear with this story as well, that which is really what made me interested in writing this story. It really unfolds much more so like a legal thriller than it does your typical sports story. We found out that the NFL, I should say, really targeted Brady from the get-go before even investigating any of the allegations about deflated balls. They had already written their conclusion about how they wanted to tear this guy down, and that's what they did. Now, the other central character of the book is Roger Goodell, and we find him to be a fascinating character because he's very Nixonian in many ways. And, you know, we write a lot about his background, and the Nixon caricature is a bit of an irony given the fact that it was Richard Nixon that basically derailed Roger Goodell's father's political career in the early 1970s. And here you have an NFL commissioner who will do anything he can to attain power and then do anything he can to retain power. Now, you mentioned, Greg, the Spygate scandal in 2007, which was a legitimate controversy. The New England Patriots were guilty of videotaping signals from opposing teams and coaches. Now, Roger Goodell at the time, he was so close to the ownership of the New England Patriots, including Robert Kraft, that he swept that scandal and that controversy under the rug, going so far as to destroying evidence that implicated the Patriots even further. That was a Bill Belichick-fueled scandal. Brady had nothing to do with it. But the other 31 owners saw this collusion, and I use that word because we hear it so often now, between Goodell and Kraft, and they said, okay, if there's anything untoward about the Patriots moving ahead, you have to go after them with both fists. Now, there's a very Shakespearean theme to the story as well, because Robert Kraft really groomed and mentored Goodell and really put him into his position as commissioner of the NFL. And here is Roger Goodell. He has got to weigh this decision to go after his friend, to go after his father figure. You know, Kraft really mentored him, and I think Goodell looked at him as a father figure. And but in order to keep his power, he had to metaphorically slay his father, and that's what he did. He was willing to do that to keep his job.
So I was about to ask you, what possible motivation could there be for Mr. Goodell to go after Tom Brady in this way? I mean, there are plenty of NFL fans who hate the Patriots and who would love nothing more than to see something like this occur. But somebody like Roger Goodell, of course, is not going to take action because of that kind of personal animosity. So in your mind, this was all about him keeping his job and salvaging good relations with all of the other owners of the NFL.
Oh, that's right. I mean, that's where his motivation, you know, began. And it was interesting. We write, as you've read, Greg, how the NFL investigators put their chess pieces in play well before the actual football game where the Patriots were accused of deflating footballs. It was really a sting operation from beginning to end. Normally, if a team is accused of any equipment violation, they are going to get a fair warning from the league in the days leading up to the game to say, hey, we're watching for this. Make sure it doesn't happen. The Patriots weren't given any indication that this was even a possibility, and all of the lead investigators of the entire league were at Foxborough Stadium, Gillette Stadium, the night in question to allegedly catch the Patriots in the act. It's also interesting to know that there has been, in the history of the NFL, never a time that footballs had been measured during the game. It was such a minor rule in the rule books that nobody had even thought about it. Your fans obviously understand, you know, the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron came out very publicly defending Brady initially, saying, "I like my footballs, you know, inflated even beyond the PSI limit because that's how I like to throw them." Now, the league was always notorious for either over-inflating or deflating footballs, and Brady was really frustrated by it because they would always over-inflate his ball. So I think his equipment guys understood this. Brady said, I like my balls a certain way. Wasn't really colluding with his equipment managers. They did what they did, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, one of the biggest scandals in American history.
You tell us that there was all kinds of evidence that was cited about this, including lots of exchanges between various figures on the Patriots staff and so on, and it's an interesting sort of paper trail, mostly an electronic paper trail, but obviously we're talking very much about circumstantial evidence. And then, of course, a 243-page report comes out in which somebody takes aim at the NFL's case and tries to kind of sort out if there's anything here. Was there anything there at all? I mean, was there reason to have these suspicions, or was this all completely a construction or fabrication?
Well, it was a fabrication or an over-amplification of an equipment violation. You know, were the equipment managers of the New England Patriots complicit in deflating balls? I think so. I think the text and trail certainly leads to that assumption, at least from a journalist like me. I think Brady was an unwitting accomplice to it all. And quite frankly, you know, Brady bears responsibility for this as well this way. He could have gotten up in front of the media right away and deflated the situation himself by saying, "I like my footballs, you know, a certain way. I didn't know it was an equipment violation. You know, what fine do I have to pay?" Normally, a violation like that would only elicit a $10,000 fine to somebody's charity. Instead, he dug his heels in, and it's always the cover up that's bigger than the crime. And I think that's really what fueled this. I think the NFL was was going to target Brady regardless, but it certainly gave them momentum and venom to go after him with everything that they have, unjustly, in my opinion.
It was interesting. I thought that one of the most intriguing matters of texts involving some of these equipment managers is when they're talking about the free stuff they want to get. And at one point, one of them uses the nickname Deflator. Come help the Deflator, referring to himself, actually. And this is a term that sort of leaps out at us and makes us kind of wonder just exactly what was going on and why it was going on.
Well, it leapt out at us, too. And, the Patriots tried to spin that story by saying that that equipment manager was engaged in a weight loss program, and that was his nickname. He was deflating via his weight loss, which to us is pretty ridiculous. You know, there is deceit on both sides, small, white lies or big, blown out, lies and betrayal. And that certainly is one of those things that, these guys clearly knew what they were doing. The equipment guys, to me, are comic relief in the book because they are so pathetic, in my opinion. But again, it does. I don't want that to overshadow the bigger story, which is, the NFL, the means that it will use and the lengths that it will go to control any player in the NFL. Tom Brady is the face of the entire league, and if you can bring Tom Brady under your thumb, what's that say for the seventh round draft pick of the Green Bay Packers trying to hold on to a roster spot? It shows that they are ultimately powerless against the shield of the NFL.
Say a word about the way in which the Patriots fought this, tried to fight back. I mean, you termed the story in some respects a legal thriller as much as anything else. Just how tough were the Patriots in trying to fight this? I mean, obviously, ultimately unsuccessful in those attempts, but how vociferous were those attempts to bat this away?
Initially, the owner, Robert Kraft, really came to Tom Brady's defense. He had created his own website, the Wells Report in Context, basically, picking apart the league's investigation of Tom Brady. And that went on for several weeks and months, and there were threats being made that the Patriots or Robert Kraft would sue the NFL. That's certainly what fans in New England thought was going to happen, but Robert Kraft eventually said and decided to give up that fight. And, you know, we open our book with Tom Brady learning that his owner has kind of not betrayed him, but certainly, not given him the support he needed. Tom Brady didn't know that Kraft was going to give up this fight, so Tom Brady, you can imagine, was very irritated and outraged by it. I think Tom Brady's coach, Bill Belichick, also threw him under the bus as well by, denouncing any idea about footballs and how the inflation rates are going. He just said, look at, the quarterback has to answer all those questions. Now, Belichick had never done that in his career. He always deflected the attention from his players, but Belichick was willing to put Brady on the spotlight. I think that's why we're seeing this fractured relationship here in New England right now between Belichick and Brady. There's no love lost there. I think Brady does not like his coach. He'll play under him because he has to, but I think that those two have a business relationship, and that's it.
In the chapter called Isolation, you explain what really happened for those four games in the fall of 2016 when quarterback Tom Brady was serving this four-game suspension. It's very, very intriguing, and I've never seen this matter written about with this kind of thoroughness at all. Describe to our listeners just what this suspension meant and how Tom Brady handled it.
Well, you know, the suspension meant that Brady could not have any contact with any player or member of the Patriots personnel for the first four games of the 2016 season. He could not. He was basically locked out of the stadium that, you know, he built, with his own throwing arm. So here he is, you know, looking for fields to play on. He had his trainer, a very controversial trainer, Alex Guerrero, that has certainly been written about over the past, 12 months. Brady looked for a receiver that could emulate some of the plays that Brady knew he would be using when he got back into the game, and he began to practice on these fields. And it was, the meticulousness of the way that he went about his training method was really astonishing. And the we interviewed the player that he was training with at the time, who just said, you really understand why he is the best in the business, because there's not a detail that he is not fully aware of and looking to improve upon every single time he steps back and throws a pass.
Mm. Well, the balance of your book is about Tom Brady's astonishing performance for the remainder of that 2016 season, which you term his season of redemption. And we'll kind of leave it to our listeners to explore that in all of the rich detail which you offer up. But it's safe to say that it is among the most astonishing performances by any NFL player ever.
I would say by any athlete ever as well, Greg. You'd have to go back to the fight between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in 1974 to really, find that comparison of an older athlete against a younger, stronger, faster opponent who seemingly is losing every round and suddenly summons up the will, the strength, and the determination to throw that knockout punch. Ali did it in Africa, and Tom Brady did it in the Super Bowl against the Falcons.
Incredible. Briefly, a couple of days ago, Tom Brady was back in the news again for an unhappy reason. He was giving a press briefing to reporters. It was all very cordial until a reporter asked about receiver Julian Edelman's suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. And Julian Edelman works with Alex Guerrero, who is one of the most important trainers of Tom Brady. And quarterback Tom Brady, when this question comes up, and it was actually a relatively benign question, but it apparently made him very angry, and he cut off the conference right then and there with scarcely a comment at all. Can you just say a quick word about this, and if you suspect that there is more behind this story?
Well, I mean, there's certainly more behind the story. You know, Brady should have answered that question because Alex Guerrero just isn't Brady's trainer. He's his business partner. The whole TB12 method is something that was developed by Brady and Alex Guerrero. And obviously, Julian Edelman has been part of the program, but he also has been, you know, lifting weights, which he, I guess, is adverse to the program itself. So there's a reason that, you know, some people could tie Edelman to the TB12 method in the PED suspension, but Brady didn't want to hear it. He should have answered that question, but he didn't. And you're seeing a guy that in the twilight of his career isn't going to be that corporate guy anymore. He's showing his personal side, his anger, and his competitive spirit more so off the field now than he ever has before.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Just makes the story of Tom Brady all the more compelling, love him or hate him. And the book we're talking about again today, 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption, published by Little Brown and Company, co-authored by Dave Wedge and Casey Sherman. Casey Sherman, you've done it again, yet another fantastic book. Thank you for writing it, and thank you for joining me today on the morning show to talk about it.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
And now I'm absolutely delighted to be reconnecting with Casey Sherman to talk about this weekend's big game between the New England Patriots and the Los Angeles Rams, in which Tom Brady and head coach Bill Belichick will be going for their sixth title together in a game which amounts to a rematch of the Super Bowl back in 2002, when the Patriots vanquished the then St. Louis Rams in a game that was the start of something big, of course, for the New England Patriots. And Casey Sherman, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I want to start out with whether or not you are at all surprised that the Patriots are back in the Super Bowl, given that even though they finished the season 11-5, a pretty darn good season for just about any team in the NFL, by Patriots standards, that was not the most spectacular of seasons. Heading into the playoffs, what were your expectations for the Patriots?
Well, you know, the regular season was well below, New England Patriots standards. So I didn't really have a lot of prospects or hope for this magical playoff run that they've been on. The team was up and down all year, and so was Brady. He was very inconsistent in his play. What we found out recently is that he was dealing with a debilitating leg injury that he has rehabbed and recovered from, and now we're seeing this incredible march to the Super Bowl that I think caught everybody by surprise, not only the national pundits who all basically said that the Patriots' run was over, but, you know, here in New England and here in Boston, there wasn't a lot of hope for a ninth Super Bowl appearance in the Brady-Belichick era, but, you know, everybody in this area is very excited about it. They're not complacent now that even though the team has won, you know, five Super Bowls and, you know, going to their ninth with Belichick and Brady, they're really excited. They know that, you know, Brady's on a mission. I mean, we all know what happened the last time Tom Brady had a chip on his shoulder, and that was when, you know, the world called him a cheater. We saw what happened in the Super Bowl against the Atlanta Falcons. Brady's got the same chip on his shoulder this year, and that chip is AARP card. Everybody has been saying that he's too old at 41 to compete at the level that that he's accustomed to, and he wants to prove everybody wrong. And I think he's going to do that on Sunday. I'm pretty confident about this game.
Wow. even though it was an up-and-down season for Tom Brady, I mean, just like the Patriots, even an up-and-down season for Tom Brady is still a pretty darn good season that most quarterbacks would envy. And not only did he earn his 14th Pro Bowl selection, but he also ended up reaching a really spectacular career milestone of total passing yards that we should spend a moment talking about. Talk about that special threshold and the rare company in which he is in now.
Well, you know, I mean, the rare company that he's been in, quite frankly, you know, for a few years now, because he basically owns just about every record in the NFL for a quarterback when you're talking about victories. The passing yardage threshold, where he's now on par with, you know, traditional passers like Peyton Manning, you know, that's special to Brady. But, you know, what he looks at is the rings on his finger. That's how, or the rings on his fingers. That's how, you know, he really judges himself amongst his peers. And, you know, there really isn't any comparison to Brady in the NFL in terms of winning. The only person you could compare him to in the annals of sports, you know, might be Michael Jordan. But, you know, what this guy has done over a, you know, 19-year career is unparalleled, amazing. And I think whether you like the Patriots or you don't like the Patriots, or Brady or you don't like him, you have to respect that.
Absolutely. You know, when I think back to my earlier days as a NFL fan, one of the only NFL quarterbacks I can remember playing past the year of 40, and there probably were others, was a guy by the name of George Blanda, playing for was he for the Raiders?
Oakland.
Or yeah, Oakland,
yeah,
Raiders.
And quarterback and a kicker.
Right. And by the age of 41, he was no longer the starter for the Raiders, and he could still serviceably throw the football. But when I think about what a 41-year-old quarterback looked like back then in the early 70s, and a 41-year-old quarterback this year like Tom Brady, it is extraordinary to compare them.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that's a credit to, you know, the condition Brady keeps himself in. He's very maniacal about, you know, his diet, his health regimen, and that's really what's really kept him in the league, where a lot of his, you know, compatriots, if you will, Peyton Manning, et cetera, you know, they're you know, mostly out of the league now. And Brady's still here, and that's because he's taken care of his body, I think, better than, you know, anybody in the sport.
Right. And, of course, we came really, really close to having two 40-year-plus quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, but, of course, it was not to be for Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints, but we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Let's talk a little more about the pathway of the Patriots to Super Bowl 53 with two really intriguing games. One much, much closer than the other. Let's talk first of all about their emphatic victory over the Los Angeles Chargers and the kind of amazing game that Tom Brady played.
And that took everybody by surprise. You know, a lot of experts here in New England were very fearful of the Chargers. They had a great regular season. They had a staunch defense. And the Patriots just cut right through them. They established their running game very early on in the contest, like they did a week later against Kansas City. And, you know, that game was never in doubt. They just ran all over the Chargers. Brady was releasing the ball after 5 seconds, which is amazing. You know, there weren't a lot of long down-the-field passes, but those tight passes where you're moving your team up the field, and that's what he's better at than anybody that's ever played the game, is establishing that that dominance and really controlling the clock, which is so key to both of those contests, that the Patriots had the ball, you know, more than clearly more than the Chargers did, certainly ball possession, but they also did that over Kansas City as well. And I think after that game, everybody turned around and said, okay, the team is back. You know, Brady doesn't have to literally put the team on his shoulders anymore and pass them into you know, the next game or into the Super Bowl. They've got a great running game. Their offensive line, which to me is going to be the key on Sunday, their offensive line is playing tremendous. They're shutting down defenses, and I know the Rams have a very formidable front four, some all-pros on that line, but I'm very confident that the Patriots will be able to, you know, handle and control the line of scrimmage.
Right. Well, the Patriots nearly didn't get to the Super Bowl thanks to the Kansas City Chiefs, and a game that some people are calling the greatest game ever played or the greatest game in recent memory. I mean, it was an extraordinary battle, and in particular, an extraordinary fourth quarter.
It was amazing. And Patrick Mahomes is such a talent, and, you know, he's going to own the league, you know, for the next decade after Brady hangs it up. This kid is, you know, really special and doesn't wilter, you know, under the pressure. I mean, but the Patriots had a lot of pressure going against them, going into Arrowhead Stadium for a playoff game. That is an almost impossible feat. And quite frankly, none of the experts really gave them a chance to win that game. And, you know, they've used that as a battle cry to rally around, that chip on their shoulders that, you know, they have to manufacture that in many ways because everybody does respect the Patriots. But inside that locker room, they're always looking for something to give them that competitive edge. And if they think the entire world of football is against them, they're going to use that. And they certainly did during that game that went back and forth. The Patriots owned the first half, and then it was just a track meet in the second half where Mahomes just came out slinging the ball, and you kind of knew that the last team that had possession, whether it was in regular time or overtime, was going to win that game. And, you know, once the coin flip went the Patriots' way in overtime, there was no doubt, I think, in anybody's mind that Tom Brady wouldn't march that team down the field and punch it in for a touchdown, which they did.
It was incredible. And so by a score, we remind everybody, of 37-31 in overtime, the New England Patriots over the Kansas City Chiefs landed themselves in yet another Super Bowl. So let's talk for a few minutes about the team that confronts them, namely the Los Angeles Rams. And I think in my introduction I mentioned that this is kind of a rematch of sorts, but we go all the way back to 2002 when the Rams were actually based in St. Louis. And if I remember correctly, there is only one player that remains from either of those teams from 2002, and of course, it's Tom Brady.
That's incredible. The fact that he's actually starting as a quarterback for the Patriots, you know, almost 19 years now, you know, after that first Super Bowl, and you remember, and we detail this in our book, the New York Times bestseller 12, you know, what Brady was going through during that game. I mean, you're talking about the most clutch player, I think, in sports history, and I think that's any sport. And he first showed it in the last minutes of that original Super Bowl against the Rams, where his coaches were, you know, demanding that he play for overtime, that he control the clock and just get the team into overtime where hopefully they would win. And the quarterback that he vanquished, Drew Bledsoe, actually screamed at Brady and said, no, screw that, go out there and sling it. And Brady did, and got him to a position where Vinatieri kicked that incredible field goal to seal the deal for the Patriots and start this magical run. The Rams are interesting because Jared Goff reminds me of a young Tom Brady. He's a really good game manager. I don't think he's won any games yet really on his own arm. I think it's I think that's really smart play calling by Sean McVay. They've got a great team.
Right.
Their defense is stacked with all pros. You know, Darnold and Ndamukong Suh. They've got two former Patriots on the team. Brandon Cooks, a receiver, and Aqib Talib, a cornerback. So there is some, you know, knowledge, institutional knowledge, back and forth about these teams. But, you know, the Patriots have not played the Rams, so they, you know, they've spent the last 2 weeks, you know, getting granular with every play that team has run this season, last season, you name it. And I think they're going to be incredibly prepared for Sunday.
Right. The Rams had an even better season than the Patriots in terms of wins and losses. They finished 13-3. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that they have enjoyed a renaissance that is incredibly spectacular after a long period of maybe a dozen seasons or so where they didn't even have a winning record. And so a high peak in 2002 and then quite a long valley of despair or frustration. And here they are near the pinnacle of the NFL.
And I think, you know, having a great team in L.A. is great for the NFL. I'm a big fan of the Rams, but I do look at the way that, you know, they that team just charged out of the gates early in the season, and they were dominant. They were the number one ranked team in the NFL for several weeks during the regular season while the Patriots were, you know, still finding their sea legs, if you will. But at the end of the season, the two teams began to trend in opposite directions. Where the Patriots get stronger, the Rams started to really struggle, not only in their last regular season games, but certainly in the playoffs, especially against the Saints. Granted, they came back, which was amazing, but, you know, as we all know, that ridiculous call that cost the Saints a trip to the Super Bowl is going to be talked about for years to come. But, hey, the Rams won that game. You know, Drew Brees threw an interception in overtime. They had an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl, but they you know, couldn't handle the pressure, quite frankly, and the Rams did.
Mm. Say a word about the extraordinary head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, one Sean McVay. And for the sake of our listeners who don't follow football closely, explain why he is such an extraordinary, even unprecedented figure in the history of NFL coaches.
No, he's one of the youngest, if not the youngest, coach in NFL history. I mean, you know, I'm old enough to be his father, for God's sakes, and here he is.
I think he was hired when he was 30 years old, and I think that does break the record.
It's amazing. And you know, when he was hired, a lot of NFL teams raised their eyebrows, and they kind of scoffed at it until they realized just how dynamic he is as a head coach. He's got a team that believes in him. You know, they're all basically men. You know, some of these players are, you know, the same age, if not older. But he commands the field. He commands the locker room. He's going to be bringing everything to bear on Sunday. He'll be incredibly prepared for the Patriots. And it'll be a chess game between, you know, Bill Belichick, who has you know, just an incredible, ridiculous record in the playoffs, and McVay, who's just getting started with his career.
I want to say one other thing about the Rams quarterback, Jared Goff. You've already spoken really highly of him and even compared him to Tom Brady. And I think one striking similarity, in a sense, is that as you do such a good job of reminding us in your book, Tom Brady was not this can't-miss prospect right from the start. I mean, when one looks early in the career of Tom Brady, one would not necessarily guess that he was headed for this surpassing greatness.
Nobody would.
Right.
You know, he was the 199th pick of the 2000 draft, late sixth round draft pick. I mean, Goff is one of the, you know, the top picks in the draft class that he came out in. And Brady had a different journey to, you know, starting in the NFL. He was the last quarterback on the depth chart. The Patriots saw something in him, and that's why they kept, I think they had four quarterbacks on the team at that time, which is crazy. They only have two now, but they saw something in Brady, and Brady kept on improving game after game or practice after practice. And when Drew Bledsoe got hurt in a game against the New York Jets in year 2000, Brady took over, and he never gave up the job, and here we are today.
Right, incredible. And Jared Goff, to his credit, I mean, did not have a fantastic first season, but boy, he rebounded to do something really special this year. So you've already said you like the Patriots this Sunday in the Super Bowl. Are you going as far as to predict a victory for them? And if so, how emphatic will it be?
And I'll give you the score as well. 38-24 Patriots. I don't think it's going to be close. I have a really – and that's not a homer talking. I didn't feel good about the Patriots going into last year's Super Bowl against the Philadelphia Eagles. They got complacent. There was a lot of turmoil around the team, which we detail in our book. And I think they didn't take it as seriously as they should have. They, of course, left their best defensive player on the bench mysteriously for the whole game, even though Brady threw for 500 yards that game. I think that this game is going to be different. I think that they have a lot to prove, especially after last year's loss. And I think, you know, like the Chargers game, I think they're going to come out, you know, and establish that dominance right after the coin toss.
Hmm. Casey Sherman, and again, he is the author of the wonderful book 12, The Inside Story of Tom Brady's Season of Redemption. Casey Sherman, great to reconnect with you. Thank you so much, and enjoy this weekend's game.
All right. Go Patriots.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine,